Good morning. Oh, children are dismissed. If you guys want to head down. That didn't help at all. So this week, I am continuing in the Love the Lord with All Your Heart series. And I'll admit that I had some trouble writing this sermon topic. I usually struggle a little bit because sermons have to be pointed, but not like overbearing and in your face. And I am one of the most disobedient people I know. Like, I don't like being told what to do, and I often think that my way is the best way. And so, as I was writing this sermon, some of you might be able to relate with that, right? So I was writing this sermon, I kept thinking of all the times people have said to me, Kai is so obedient, she's got such a great story or such a great testimony. And every time I think of people saying that or they say that to me, I laugh because I'm like, you have no idea. You actually have no idea what happens internally, right? It's like when people tell my mom she's such a great mom, she's like, spend a couple hours with us and you'll see how often I lose my cool, right? People have no idea what happens behind the closed doors. Now we're going to explore the topic of obedience this week, and I encourage you to listen to the previous sermons that Mike has given in this series because it's more in-depth than this brief little blurb that I'm going to give. But it comes directly from Matthew 22, verse 37, and you can write that down. But it says, Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. God first loved us, so we love in return. And in any love relationship, there is obedience, right? You married people can attest to that. We obey our spouse because we love them. And I think that's an important thing to take note of, or we should obey them, right? Because when we look up the dictionary definition of obedience, it simply says compliance with an order, request, or law. Observance of monastic rule. But I think that's putting obedience in the Lord far too simply. We do not obey merely because it's an order. There's no joy in that. If we are merely obeying just because we think we'll get blessings from it, then it will be a long, hard, and miserable walk in our faith. The same can be said for marriages. I'm not married, so I can't, like, give direct testimony. But when I hear married couples refer to each other as the old ball and chain, like, I'm not encouraged by that in any way. I don't go, I can't wait to get married and be referred to as a ball and chain, right? Like, that's weird. And I think that there's something wrong with that view and wrong in that relationship. When we see our significant other as someone weighing us down, right? That's kind of weird. Not to put any of your marriages on the spotlight. Sorry if I did. But more so, it makes me wonder how many of us view Jesus as that, as our old ball and chain. Something that we just have to drag around or something that we're chained to. And in case you didn't gather, that is not a very healthy view to have. I would argue that having this view comes from a place of pride. Thinking that our way is better merely because we don't want to listen and do what the Lord has asked of us. Now, if that hurts your feelings, good. Sometimes we need somebody to call us out, right? Sometimes we need that. Francis Chan, the author of Crazy Love, has this quote. And if you haven't read that book, I encourage you to. He says, if you're obsessed with Jesus, you'll be defined by your obsession. You won't be able to stop talking about him or thinking about him. More importantly, you'll constantly find yourself acting like him. You'll go to the places Jesus would go and do the things that he did, no matter what sacrifice or discomfort it may bring. And a lot of us are not obsessed with Jesus. That's a sad reality, right? That's not meant to be a guilt trip. That's just a reality check. A lot of us are not obsessed with Jesus. We take his name, but we don't act or talk or think like Jesus would. Most of us in the church are willing to help out, right? We will volunteer for something, we'll write our name on the list, as long as it fits in with our schedule. We're willing to donate money. We're willing to donate time or even comfort, as long as it's on our terms. But that's not obedience. There is nothing sacrificial about that. That's called convenience. I'll tell you what. This was a convicting sermon to write. Because anytime someone's up here giving a sermon, the finger's always pointing back here first. We're going to turn in our Bibles over to the book of Daniel. It's in the Old Testament. And while you're flipping, this is one of my all-time favorite books in the Bible. There is so much wisdom in it, but there's also really great examples of obedience. From the beginning to the end, Daniel's life and his friends' lives are a testimony of obedience. In the first chapter, they are taken as prisoners and exiled from their land to be servants of Babylon. In the second chapter, Daniel risks his life to interpret a dream for the king, even though all the other men in his same trade were executed. Both of those are terrific examples, but we're going to focus in on chapter 3 of Daniel. We're going to start in verse 1, and if you don't have your Bibles, it's okay, it'll be up on the screen. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, the prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So all of the officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and people of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing fire." Okay, there's a lot there. And I don't know about you, but I would have a lot of questions if this was suddenly summoned upon me, if I suddenly heard this. Okay, what is a zither? I've heard of one in Dr. Seuss books before. Like, honestly, that was the question I had as I was reading this. Dr. Seuss books, I've heard of it there, but I have no idea what one is. I've never seen one. We didn't play one in high school band. Like, what is that? What is this statue supposed to truly represent other than one man's huge ego? Like, why am I doing this? How big is the furnace? Is it big enough to fit my entire body or just part of it? Honestly, these are questions that went through my head. Maybe not yours, but I like have so many questions about this. But these people did not have the chance to ask these questions. They probably didn't even have the chance to think about the questions. The story continues on with verse 8. It says, "For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the lyre, the zither, the bagpipe, all these things, the music, when you hear the music, they're supposed to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." And we're going to pause again, mostly just because I want to make a comment of how petty that charges, right? That's like, you're shaking your head. That's weird. They're like, namely, we don't want to point any fingers, but these specific people are not doing what you commanded them to do. Just had to make that comment. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, the moment you hear the sound of all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?" Now let's take a moment to unravel this. These guys, these three men that are brought before the king, have two options. They can compromise their faith and stay safe, not be thrown into a fire. Or they can disobey the king to obey the king. And I've always prayed that my response in a situation like this would be to obey the king, right? Because I've always heard stories of like people being executed to stay, to defend their faith. And I've always thought of myself in that position and wondered what my response would be. Because I'm not afraid to die, but I am afraid of how I would die. And being thrown into a fire to burn alive is like, it's never been on my list. Like, I've never been like, yeah, that's a good way to go, right? That's not, no, I don't know anybody that would say that. But these men have the most profound response. And if you highlight in your Bible, I would strongly encourage you to highlight verses 16 through 18. It says, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up.'" Oh boy, does that give you chills? That gives me chills. Like just imagining being there and witnessing these three men standing before a king that has a blazing fire that they can be thrown into at any moment. And they say, "Even if our God doesn't deliver us and we do die, we're not going to obey you because we obey the king." Wow. How incredible is that faith to obey even to death? We'll do crazy things as Christians, but not often do we do it if it's dangerous, right? Unless you're like an adrenaline junkie and you just jump off a cliff for fun. Those people are weird. If you're one of those people, you're weird. Friends, would you say that you place personal comfort and safety above what God may want to do in you or through you? Think about it. Do I place comfort and safety above what God wants to do in me or through me? I can't answer that for you. Please understand that I'm not asking or telling you that you should go throw yourself into a fire or do other extreme things, because if it's not done through and by God, then we're just doing crazy things to do crazy things. Maybe your crazy thing doesn't look like this specific example. Maybe it looks like going out of your comfort zone and praying with somebody at a bus stop. Because for some of us, that's really intimidating. Maybe it means taking the time to stop and be still with God and be vulnerable before God, because that's really uncomfortable for everybody, Maybe it means getting rid of something or some sin in your life that you've been clinging to. I don't know. I can't answer that for you. You're going to have to take the time to gauge that for yourself. But it's important to listen to what he calls us to. Not just for our own lives, because the Lord wants good things for us, but because our lives reflect him to other people and to those around us. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58 says, "Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." Our obedience is not in vain. We will see fruit to our labor. And it may take a while to see that fruit, or it might be immediate. In the case of Daniel's friends, it was immediate. Nebuchadnezzar was furious with the response that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego gave, so he ordered them to be tied up tightly and for the furnace to be lit 7 times hotter than usual, so much so that the guards that threw them in were burned up as well. Okay, that's a hot fire. We'll pick it up at verse 24. It says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astounded and stood up in haste. He said to his high officials, 'Was it not 3 men we cast into the midst of the fire?' They replied to the king, 'Certainly, O king.' He said, 'Look, I see 4 men loosened and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods.' Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire. He said, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here.' Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire." See, from their obedience to God, from their example, the lives of those around them were touched and influenced. Nebuchadnezzar saw and believed that they served the Most High God. Okay, that's immediate. That's immediate fruit. Obedience isn't just for you in your life. Obedience is also for those around you. When I was first called into ministry and told my parents what I felt called to, because all my life, my parents told me I needed to go to college, and I was always resistant against that. It didn't make sense to me to pay money, so much money, for something I had no interest in, because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And then I got called into ministry and told my parents that I was going to go to college to become a pastor, and they said, "No way are you doing that. You're never going to make any money." And I said, "Yes, you are correct. I'm going to do it." And they tried very, very hard to persuade me, not because they're bad parents or because they didn't want me to obey the Lord, but because they really care about me. And they said, "Stay here with us in town and go to one of the community colleges." And I didn't do that. I didn't obey my parents because I had a command from the king. Again, that's not me shaming my parents at all. They really, really care about their kids. I knew it wouldn't be easy, and my parents knew it wouldn't be easy. But eventually they supported me, and they moved me down to middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, and signed some papers, so I now owe the government my life. I will forever be paying off this astronomical debt that I have acquired. And I got a degree in one of the most least-paying jobs. It doesn't make any sense, and when I tell people about it, they're like, "Are you insane?" Maybe. I don't know. And I don't tell that story to try and boast about myself. Because let me tell you, it's been a hard path to walk on. It hasn't been easy, and at times it's been discouraging. But we see fruit to our labor. As we close, I want to leave you with one last verse and thought for you to think about throughout the rest of the week. This last verse comes from James 1, It's verses 2-4. It says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. We see fruit to our labor." Say that with me. We see fruit to our labor, right? I'm a youth pastor, so I make the kids repeat things with me because then it sticks in their heads. It'll stick in your head now. Rebecca's going to come up for one last song, and Mike and I are going to be up here at the front to pray with whoever needs it. And I want you to think, because maybe you need to pray for whatever sin that God has been trying to call you out of. Maybe that's where your prayer needs to be. Maybe obedience isn't a thought for you because you're hurting. Maybe you're not at that stage yet, and that's okay. Come on up, we'll pray with you. Maybe you don't even know what thing God is calling you to be obedient to. That's okay, come on up. I'm just trying to encourage you to come on up. We want to pray with you. We like doing that. Rebecca's going to finish up with this song. You can sit, you can stand. You can dance, I guess. Just don't hurt the people around you. But sing with us.